Before we get into this episode, we'd like to preface that today's guest, Dr. Kim Garabedian, does not endorse or financially benefit from our partnership with UNatural. UNatural did not commission or approve this episode, so please talk to your doctor or a trusted medical professional to figure out which supplement options are best for you. If you're trying to get pregnant, there's some pretty wild superstitions out there, like eating a pineapple core right after ovulation or putting egg whites you know where. Like what? Oh my God, please do not do that. There's a much safer natural option I want to tell you about. These clean vegan multivitamins for women from UNatural help to support fertility, balance hormones, aid ovulation, regulate menstrual cycles, and promote healthy conception. Each capsule is packed with ingredients like myo-inositol, chaste tree berry, and ashwagandha, which are known to help with fertility. There's no artificial fillers, binders, or ingredients, only the good stuff. No wonder these multivitamins have over 23,000 five-star reviews. Click the link in the show notes to support your fertility today with UNatural Conception for Her.
Before we get into this episode, I wanted to take a moment to acknowledge that this conversation was recorded before the Alabama Supreme Court ruled that embryos are considered children. This devastating ruling puts Alabama patients seeking IVF treatment in an impossible situation. It's just the latest reminder that we still have a long way to go in our fight for reproductive justice. Hello, welcome back. I'm your host, Avery. I'm the founder and CEO of Bloom, a workplace design consultancy, and a firm believer that work should work for all of us. Today, I'm joined with Liz, Girl Boss's general manager, and Victoria, Girl Boss's senior writer, who both co-produced this podcast. We've talked about vaginal health and periods on the podcast in the past, but we actually haven't talked about fertility and egg freezing, and that is why I am so excited for this conversation. Liz, Victoria, how did you feel?
I think we all have our own thoughts and private experiences with this. For me, I always think back to that episode of Friends where Rachel turns 30 and she has the birthday cake in front of her and she's having a bit of a meltdown. And then she tries to calm herself down by saying, well, as long as I have a child by 35, I have 5 years. Oh, but wait, I want to meet the guy before I have a kid and I want to date for a little while. So I guess I have 4 years. Oh, but I want to be engaged for at least a year before we get married. So I guess I have 3 years. And slowly she starts running out of years. And she essentially realizes that in order to meet her child by 35 deadline, she has to meet her partner like yesterday. And there's a sort of collective doom that befalls the table. And I think of that scene as my Roman Empire. I also am guilty of doing that mental math in my head of like, well, if I want to have a kid by 34, I still have 2 more years of just roaming around the streets and not worrying about it before I have to really think about it. It's a thought I'm sure a lot of women have, whether they're really gung-ho about having kids or whether they're ambivalent about it, like myself. And I think for me, sometimes I wonder, should I just get my fertility tested just so I can have that question mark stop hanging over my head? What if it won't be easy for me? Will that create a whole new set of problems and worries in my mind? Or will it, in a weird way, like answer an unsettled question once and for all? That's my own private experience with it, of course. I'm sure other people feel differently. But the point of this episode is, much like our divorce episode, is we want to open the door, just like that episode opened the door to a lawyer's office. This episode, we hope, opens the door to a fertility office without maybe the cost or without you having to take that really scary mental leap to walk through that threshold and find out for yourself.
Fertility wasn't even something that I thought I had to deal with yet. I was like, oh, like fertility, it'll just be something that I deal with if and when there's an issue. But Dr. Kim was like, no, you should get your fertility checked as early as possible because it just exactly does provide reassurance for your future self, which I thought was really important. And I mean, I'm 27 and the thought of having kids is like so far down the line for me. My mom had me at 35, and I've become more open to the idea of having kids at like 35 to 40. There's a cousin of mine who had her first child at 40, and that was the first person I've seen that I was like, okay, I could actually see myself aligning with that timeline. But that also comes with me just assuming that everything will be fine with my reproduction. Just having that information made me feel so much less anxious and less, I'll just kick this down the line. I'm like, okay, you know what? Maybe this is my sign to get this figured out today.
I think women in their late 20s and early 30s have to carry like a dual narrative. There's one narrative where we see women, I have so many peers in their late 30s and early 40s who are having their first child. And I'm like, great, it's possible. It's happening. It's totally fine. But then we also have all that fear-mongering medical data about how your fertility falls off a cliff after X age. And so you have to kind of carry those two almost contradictory narratives around all the time and figure out for yourself which side you want to lean into more, the fear or the optimism.
My biggest barriers when it comes to egg freezing have been self-inflicted. So I have endometriosis. So I know that that's something that impacts fertility. And I'm 35. So I know that your egg count drops significantly once you hit a certain age that I've already passed. And then also I've had an abortion in the past. I had to have an abortion. I had an ectopic pregnancy. So this is something I've never really publicly spoken about before. So it was a very scary experience. Whenever I think about fertility or even the experience of being pregnant, because I've been pregnant in the past, it just brings up a lot of trauma for me. So one of the reasons why I actually haven't pursued egg freezing or learned about it has been my own fear. And what I loved about this conversation is that she really tethered through a lot of the myths, misinformation, and then also the fear that comes with every single person that goes into the office before they actually have a conversation with her. And it just felt really comfortable for me. I felt like I got a lot of value from this conversation because it helped to temper a lot of the fear that I have and also my own experience, like with trauma associated with fertility and pregnancy, which I know a lot of people, specifically women and non-binary people, experience.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. I think that's also hopefully the modern future of fertility is something that takes into account the psychological just as much as the physical, because it is such an emotional process. And for people that tend to immediately go to the worst case scenario or tend to really focus on the negatives that it brings up for them, I think that's almost more important than the physical care you might be receiving, is to have somebody who's really sympathetic on the other end and isn't just treating this as a standard medical procedure.
Yeah, I know that there's so much information that we just don't have, and this conversation provided me with all the information that I need to feel a little bit more comfortable about pursuing that. I think a lot of people are going into these conversations already feeling like they failed at something. So finding out any additional information only feels like they're compounding on that perception of failure.
That's such a good point. I'm paraphrasing the episode and I don't want to get it wrong, but I think that a baseline, very entry point fertility test is just a blood test. It's a lot less invasive and I think all-consuming than I had built it up in my head. And this is typical human behavior. I think the more we avoid something, the more we tend to make a big deal out of it in our minds. And I think procrastinating fertility is not something that anybody should be shamed for or feel guilty about, because it comes from a very valid place.
That's why we're chatting with Dr. Kim Karbedian, a board-certified OBGYN and a women's health and fertility doctor. She also leads a modern fertility care clinic in Toronto, Canada called Pollen, and is certified in Canada. In this episode, we hope to help you figure out your own fertility and answer some of your most pressing questions, like what really happens in the egg freezing process, when you should get your fertility checked, and how soon you should start. Dr. Kim, thank you for joining us at Girl Boss Radio today. I am very excited to have this conversation with you. First and foremost, how are you feeling today?
Pretty good. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, yes. I feel like I have conversations with friends about fertility every single day. So I know that this will be an appreciated conversation within my friend group for some of my closest friends. But then also just in general, I know a lot of people struggle with fertility on a daily basis.
It's really common. And I think one of the things I like the most is hearing that you're having conversations with your friends. And I think that is progress that we're making. For so many years, fertility was something no one talked about. People maybe were stressed about their eggs, but they didn't say it. So hearing that people are open talking to their friends is actually what we're going for. And we know that 1 in 6 individuals or couples around the globe, so it's a global number, have difficulty with infertility. And there's so many more patients who need to access fertility in order to get pregnant. So whether they're using donor sperm or donor eggs. So it's definitely something that people should talk about. And the more we talk about it, hopefully the less patients are going to need to see me in the future.
Fertility is a topic that affects many people across the globe. As you mentioned, there's 1 in 6 people that are navigating the struggles that might come along with it. Can you provide an overview of common misconceptions about fertility that you encounter in your practice?
Oh, yeah. That's why I like doing podcasts like this. And I would say the biggest one is age. So I think the more we talk about it, I think people appreciate that age and fertility are linked. So I think that most people, 9 times out of 10, people are going to say, yeah, age and fertility are related. But I think the misconception is when fertility starts to decline. So I think people think, well, I'm having periods, so I should be good to go. Or probably my 40s is going to get tricky. I think it surprises a lot of people that it's actually in your 30s. So we're born with all the eggs we have, and the number of eggs just continually declines. And starting at 30, we start to see a decline. But that being said, I always reassure my patients, fertility doesn't change overnight. It changes over time. It's not like the minute you turn 30, things are going down, but it is a lot sooner. So Other big misconceptions would be things that most women and people have heard about. So PCOS or polycystic ovaries. So I often hear patients come tell me, I hear I can't get pregnant or I'm going to have infertility. And although polycystic ovaries is related to ovulation and can increase the risk of fertility, it's extremely treatable. People sort of get half the story and my job is to fill in the other half. And I always tell people, usually when you come see me, I make you feel better. So whatever that sort of myth or misconception, I can usually take it back and people leave going, okay, so I feel a little bit better about this. And that's why it's so important to talk about your reproductive health, because usually what you are thinking is the worst of the worst. And then I kind of pull it over and it doesn't sound so bad.
Yeah, I love that. And I have so many questions in relation to age and like when people should get their fertility check. I think one of the biggest barriers for people that I've come across in my conversations is like people think it's a really hard process. I actually don't know if it is or not. So that was my first question. How hard is it for me to check my fertility?
So very easy to check it. So definitely not. The journey is challenging. And depending on your fertility journey, yes, huge emotional and physical challenges, but the actual starting process is easy. And at Pollen, we're really trying to decrease barriers as much as possible. Where I practice, you need a referral from a family doctor to see a fertility specialist. So we've actually built that into our process. So that's not a barrier. Patients just can call, they get connected, they get to see us. To come in, so it's easy to talk to a fertility doctor. Usually when you come see me, I just take your history, I learn about your periods. It's important when you're not trying to get pregnant for me to learn about your goals. So how many kids do you want? When do you want to start? What are your misconceptions? So that's usually the first step. Checking it, like I said, is pretty easy. It's a blood test and an ultrasound. So usually patients see me and they walk right over to the blood and ultrasound room. The blood test we do is called an anti-Müllerian hormone or AMH, and that's the one most patients want. And what it does is it gives us your egg count. So it's not a test for egg quality, but it does tell us, if I look at other people in your age group, do you have more eggs? Do you have less? Are you right where you should be? And it kind of gives us a good estimate of what we're looking at. Quality is a little different. Usually I show you a bunch of graphs that talk about your age. So the two kind of go together. So egg quality and the number, and then we put it together and reflect you. We also do an ultrasound because when people talk about fertility, we definitely talk about eggs, eggs, and eggs again. But we also want to do a quick double look at the uterus and look at the anatomy and make sure it's healthy. So most people have heard of fibroids or other things. So is there something about your uterus that I need to optimize before you start trying? And then the big thing afterwards, when we talk about options. So I think a lot of people think, oh, I'm only going to see a fertility doctor if I want to freeze my eggs. Not true. Come talk to us, because I always think like that's a barrier for people. I'm not going to freeze my eggs, so I'm not going to go. I actually think it's more important. Talk to me. Let's do your testing. Let's give you some information. I can give you your options, because some of the options are just get pregnant. So you can get pregnant with donor sperm if you're not ready or you don't have a partner. You can freeze your eggs. We can freeze embryos. There's so many different options that I think not coming in with that preconceived freeze eggs, not freeze eggs. It's more learn, get tested, learn about options. And then I work with you to figure out what makes the most sense for you.
What I'm hearing is an emphasis on information. So for folks that are like, they don't even know if they want to have kids, I'm kind of in that camp. Don't know if I want to have children or not, if starting a family is something that's a priority. Would you still recommend that those people check their egg count?
Absolutely. Because I see patients at different life stages. So sometimes they're not sure what they're doing. And sometimes they're just got out of a relationship. And I always think I see the twists and turns in people's lives. And I've had patients who say they want 8 babies and then they only have 1. And I always think anything can happen in life, and so many twists and turns that you don't have to do anything. Information is just information. And sometimes people come see me and think, oh, I'm never going to freeze my eggs. But if I'm telling you, you know what, actually, even though you're 28, you know, your egg counts are actually quite low, then all of a sudden it's like, well, wait a second. I don't know if I want kids, but maybe egg freezing makes more sense. And I always think present you should give future you options. So give future you all the options so that no matter where life takes you, you're good to go. Egg freezing has a weird backup plan because the goal is to never use them. We actually just want to get these expensive eggs, freeze them, and we want you to try naturally. We want you to have the family you want, and we want these to be there in case you need them. And as I said, no one knows how they're going to respond to information until I tell them. You might be relieved. You might be like, great, she says everything's good to go. I'm going to come back in a couple of years and we'll reassess things. Or there's a surprise there. The other things we find is we're gynecologists. So sometimes I find endometriosis. Sometimes I find PCOS. Sometimes people have abnormal periods. So I'm always surprised when he said one of the things that surprises me is that how many women I educate who probably have had endometriosis their whole life. And at 40, I'm like, wait a second, this is what you have. This is your diagnosis. The good news is I can improve your quality of life. I can decrease your period pain. This is not normal. People think of seeing fertility doctors just about eggs, but little things I can tweak. We can get you in to see some of our other doctors that talk to you about diet, lifestyle, supplements. So the misconception is we're just going to be like, freeze your eggs. I always tell people, even if we're not going to freeze your eggs, I can usually do something that's going to optimize your reproductive health.
You mentioned that egg count starts to decrease at the age of 30. Based on that, when do you recommend that women and people check their fertility?
What we usually recommend is 25. That feels like a first check. 25 will give us sort of a good baseline of where are you at? Are you where you should be for a 25-year-old? Then if anything changes over your life, we kind of know where you started. So if we identify low count in someone who's 25, we can get on top of it when they still have really great quality eggs. So I had a patient one time who was 25. She was about to have surgery for endometriosis. So we recommend you getting your egg count first. And that's because when you have surgery for endometriosis, we might remove cysts that decrease your egg count. So we always like to get a baseline. And she just, out of, for whatever reason, had an extremely low egg count and probably was going to go into menopause by the time she was 30. So we actually were able to do multiple egg freezing cycles to get a good group of eggs. And now she's probably okay. Had she had the endometriosis surgery 10 years before when we weren't doing those egg count tests, she might not have known. So I always think anytime it's 25, a big starting point, or when you're having surgery. So we have some young patients in their 20s who are doing endometriosis surgery, always a good thing to do before. So it's a good balance. But then anytime something changes, so sometimes people will check it. Usually I would say at 25, if everything's good to go, you can check it again. We'll be when you're 28, 29. Once you get over 32, it's better to recheck every year because things just drop a little bit quicker and conversations change. So I think, again, that's the misconception. When you come talk to me, we don't have to freeze your eggs. If you're 25, I might say to you, hey, everything actually looks really good. Do you want to wait a couple of years, freeze your eggs? We can kind of see where things go. So it's all about sort of the conversations with the patients, because any sort of treatment or conversation or pathway has to include the emotional, how they're feeling, what their goals are, finances, how busy their life is. There's all these things that go into fertility decisions. So we always just want to find the right patient at the right time to do the right thing for them. How busy their life is. Like, there's all these things that kind of go into fertility decisions. So we always just want to find the right patient at the right time to do the right thing for them.
Yeah, interesting. And I read also recently that the research and the information that even practitioners and specialists like yourself have is evolving and changing with time. So that's also shifting what this looks like. I'm asking this on behalf of friends that I've spoken to. What advice would you give to someone who wants to have children, but they're past that 25 age mark? Maybe they're in their mid-30s. When would you say they should get their fertility checked?
I would just check it. So definitely, I think there's a fear of checking it. I always say there's no bad or good news. All that it's information that we can work with. And egg freezing, you can freeze your eggs at any age. It's never too late to come talk to a fertility doctor. And we have 100 different options and we just have to work through and find something for you. But definitely if she's in her late 30s, isn't sure what she wants to do, but knows she wants to have children, absolutely, it's time to come see a fertility doctor.
And I think another thing that I realized in conversation, anecdotally, all of the people that I've had conversations with have really waited until they wanted to have kids. Is it a reoccurring mindset that you're seeing on your end?
I do hear it a lot. So we also counsel a lot of couples that are thinking about trying maybe in a year or two. And I like to see that people are coming in early, they're proactive, we're checking their fertility, making sure people are good to go when they're ready. There's lots of genetic tests out there that we can do to help people have healthier pregnancies. So I think it's more just the way healthcare is in general. You have problem with your appendix, you get your appendix out. We're very reactive. I think healthcare is designed to be problem, fix problem. Whereas I think fertility, you have to think of more of, if I do this early, if I get this information, if I work on optimizing things, I hopefully won't have to see a fertility doctor later. So I think it's more just ingrained in us. You go to the doctor when you have a problem. But I think with fertility, we're really trying to say, hey, come see us early, get some information. Let's see what we can do. Let's protect your fertility. Sometimes it's as easy as just even being on the right supplement. So your friend who's over 30, even if she's not interested in doing egg freezing or getting pregnant or any of those options, just sitting with us and learning about the right supplements to help with her egg quality, that's something. So there's always something you can do. But yeah, no, you're right. People usually do that. Or when a relationship status changed and they're like, uh-oh. But I think too, it's hard because men, although age and fertility are related for men or anyone with sperm, it's different. It's like on a different trajectory. It doesn't decline quite as early as it does with eggs. But also they make new sperm every 90 days. So their bodies are amazing in the sense that sperm, a whole new group of sperm 90 days later. women, we make our eggs once and we're only declining. That's just created a situation where not everybody is as worried about their fertility at the same time on the same pathway.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest learning for me when I started exploring about fertility. I've just been carrying around these eggs with me all these years.
Yes, and you're not getting any more.
I remember learning about that in like sexual health education when I was a kid, but it's one of those things you don't care about at the time when you retain the information. So as I've been coming up against like having conversations with friends and learning more about fertility, it's been something I was like reminded of that I was like, wow, that's pretty remarkable and cool, but also unfair that like men are just constantly generating new sperm and we're just carrying around the same
eggs.
Yeah, the eggs our whole life.
And that's actually usually what I say to people, because when I talk to couples, that's usually what I'm saying. Like, I know it's not fair. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you trying to conceive but haven't had any luck? Or maybe you just got off birth control and are ready to start your fertility journey. There are plenty of products on the market for you, but what about your male partner? It takes two to tango in this fertility dance. Conception for Him from You Natural is a potent and clean male fertility supplement to help strengthen his swimmers and get them moving along. The proprietary blend of ashwagandha, myo-inositol, folate, and 14 vitamins and minerals promotes healthy conception. Plus, each capsule is enhanced with black pepper extract to improve nutrient absorption. Click the link in the show notes and order your partner You Natural Conception for Him Fertility and Aid Multivitamin. You'll both thank me later. You're listening to our chat with Dr. Kim. Next up, she explains what it's really like to get your eggs frozen and whether or not you have to give up alcohol. Let's get back into it.
I want to get into actually talking about the egg freezing process, but when it comes to fertility, what are some things that people can do proactively to navigate the emotions that come up through the fertility journey?
I think it's support. I think support doesn't have to mean a partner. It could be a friend group. Lots of people actually do fertility assessments and treatment together. But I think it's really making sure as you're going through the journey, you're aware that it has a huge emotional impact and you're constantly checking in. And we do that too. So we have a lot of resources for our patients. So we have counselors, we have mindset coaches, which I think are really helpful, and just checking in. But you also, as a patient, making sure you have a support system. If you are struggling, reach out to us, because there are so many resources that we have for you. And also recognizing that it's normal. So I think a lot of people are reluctant to tell us they're struggling because it feels like, well, I'm not coping, but fertility treatment's hard. So usually when you have something, you break your leg, you break your arm, you get it fixed, you move on. Fertility treatment, some patients are doing fertility treatment for 2 or 3 years. One of the hardest parts is the roller coaster. They wait for a period, they do treatment, they ovulate, they get excited, they get a negative pregnancy test, and that cycle just keeps repeating month after month. So I think when you say, what can they do? It's recognizing that it's normal for it to be hard, but just because it's normal to be hard doesn't mean you can't get help and we can't support you.
I think that now more than ever, we are in the age of collaboration and building in coalition. We're seeing this so much more. And I think that TikTok has been an interesting forum in which people are sharing intimate stories about things like fertility and egg freezing journey. And I'm learning from other people, but then also what's interesting is they're building community around them with it. And one thing that you mentioned was a lot of people go and do this with friends. And it's something that I actually saw, of all things, a reality TV show. So on Summer House, they all went together. Three of the women that are cast members, they went in support of their one colleague friend who was wanting to get information about her fertility. And she's quite anxious and nervous about it. So they, in coalition and in support of her, did it with her as well. And what's interesting is that there was one person who wasn't really thinking about fertility, but did it in support of her friend, but then got what she deemed to be not so great news about her fertility and her egg count. And that spurred on a whole new awareness when she had that information. I think what I'm saying here is that if you're listening in, I wanted to double down on this. Do it with your friends, especially since there's a lot of women now and people more than ever that are exploring their fertility journey on their own. They're not doing it with a partner always. So that makes it a little bit easier.
It does. Just like you said, you don't always know what you're going to get. So I think the hardest thing about a fertility check is patients are doing it to be reassured and they're doing it to feel better because they're like, okay, well, I'm not trying yet. I just want to feel good. And the hard thing in my job is sometimes I can't reassure them. So sometimes I'm like, hey, just like that person in the TV show, it's like, actually, your egg count's supposed to be here and it's here. And it's still valuable to come in. Knowing something is better than not knowing too late. Usually when people come see me, it's not too late. Yes, we know it's not exactly where we want it to be, but here are X, Y, and Z, here are the steps that we're going to do to get you where you need to go. that's the hardest thing is I know people are coming to just feel good so they can sleep well at night, so they can forget about their fertility. And sometimes it doesn't go that way, but it's still proactive. So it might be a harder appointment than we envision, but at the end, they're usually happy that they at least had that information, were able to do something about it. And having your friends there, I mean, that's a positive thing, especially when you go through fertility treatment. There's a lot of injections. Sometimes you need someone to help you with those injections. So obviously, fertility clinics can send people to your house, but doing it with your friends is probably a lot more fun.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of barriers, how much does it cost to check your egg count?
It's actually not too bad. I mean, I think depending on what plan you have, because I know everybody has different benefit plans, usually it's as simple as an ultrasound and a blood test. The blood test is about $100 where we are, and the ultrasounds are about $100, but it would be probably under $500 would be my guess. Looking at different employee benefit plans all over North America, most are covering it. So if you could say what is one of the biggest amazing things that's starting to happen. So the more we're talking about fertility, the more employers are covering fertility. Even though the drugs could be up to $5,000 a cycle, they're being covered. So I think the important thing is everybody, before you go, look into your benefit plan and probably there is fertility coverage.
I recently saw this TikTok that went completely viral from a woman who was sharing the things that she wished she knew before she started her egg freezing journey. And the one thing she talked about was not the cost, which is what I anticipated she was going to talk about. She actually talked about the time commitment. What does it take to freeze your eggs?
It is time consuming. So we do design it, fertility treatment and the monitoring process, to be as easy as possible, in the sense that we really want people to come to the clinic and still be able to go to work. So the whole process, start to finish, think of everything in a menstrual cycle. So about the length of a menstrual cycle. So usually what happens is you get a period and then you come in the first couple of days of your period. If everything looks good, fertility doctors love blood work and ultrasound. We do it all the time. So you would do blood work and ultrasound. If everything looks like you're at your baseline, it really is the early start of your period, you do injections. So the injections we have just look like this, a fertility pen. You do them yourself. You just touch a button and you hit it and it goes in your tummy. So it's actually pretty easy to do. And I always tell patients, the first time you do it, injecting yourself is going to be challenging. But once you do it once, you're going to be like, okay, this is pretty easy. I can do this, no problem. So the injections you do every day for about 10 days. So in that 10 days where you're doing the injections, you're coming in for monitoring. So that's probably what patients mean by it's really time consuming. So think about it. You wake up early. So the earliest most clinics monitor is 7 a.m., 7 to 9. So you have to wake up early, changes your routine. You have to come in, do blood work and ultrasound. Depending on the clinic, you might be there for 15 minutes. You might be there for 2 hours. So it really just depends on how they set up their monitoring program. And then usually later in the afternoon, the clinic will contact you and tell you what injection to do, what dose, when do you have to come back. So even though you're not at the clinic the whole day, it's on your mind. You're thinking about your ovaries, you're feeling twinges here or there, wondering if the hormones are working, you're getting phone calls, you're doing injections. So I do know from what patients tell me is it's not just that 1 hour. It does consume their thoughts for the rest of the day. And then again, within that 10 days, you might be in the clinic, say 5 days for monitoring. There's some unlucky patients that maybe their ovaries are a little trickier and they actually end up in more than that. So it can be even 10 days in a 15-day period. So it just depends on the patient. But I would say the average is you're doing the injections for about 10 days and you're in the clinic for about 5 of those days. Once you're ready to go, we usually can give you about a day and a half notice of when your procedure is. So it's not like regular surgeries where you can circle the day on the calendar, tell your work you're off. Your body determines it. We can estimate it, but really it comes down to what your body wants and you can't change it. I can't change it. We have to just go what your ovaries want to do. So depending on where you're getting your egg freezing, you're either completely put asleep, so like a general anesthetic, or you're given conscious sedation, so medication through an IV. For both of those options, you have to take the rest of the day off. So I've had patients who, I don't know, they're lawyers, they have a trial in court and they don't want any sedation. You can do that, but definitely I tell patients, take the sedation, take the day off work. The next day, usually patients take the day off work. So when we do the egg retrieval procedure, so you should be pretty comfortable, whatever sedation they use, we use an ultrasound, so an internal ultrasound. And it's the same ultrasound you would have had those other days of monitoring. So by the time we get to the retrieval, you've had it a few times. And on the end of the ultrasound, there's a little needle and we actually go through right through the back wall of the vagina and we poke it into the ovary, which I know doesn't sound so fun, but you're asleep. And the reason we actually do it from the inside is just safer. So if we go that way, we're going right into the ovary, we're missing bowel and bladder and we're missing blood vessels and things like that. So it's a safe place to go into the ovary. And just like when you get your blood taken, there's no needle marks, there's no stitches, no sutures. So the same idea, when we take the needle out, the procedure is done. So when patients wake up, they're going to feel crampy, but it's going to be a little bit more intense. generally patients will take something for pain control. The next day, you're feeling pretty crampy too. And I always tell patients your hormones drop pretty quickly overnight. So it's also like that emotional feeling. Your hormones really high. The next day, they're really low. So just be kind to your body and take those 2 days off. And I would say the majority of patients the following day can start to go back to work. Our bodies are amazing. So as soon as you get your next period, it's like none of that ever happened. So your whole cycle resets, your ovaries should go back to baseline, your hormones go back to baseline.
And another thing that I've had conversations with friends about is that they've had disheartening experiences with practitioners where they've been shamed for different lifestyle choices. Are there lifestyle factors that can impact fertility?
I think shaming's always wrong. I mean, I don't think you should be a reproductive health doctor if you're going to judge people. I mean, I think we're the kind of doctors that you have to feel comfortable talking to, and you have to feel comfortable disclosing different parts of your history. So I think the converse, I'm reassuring people, you've had an abortion, it's okay, it doesn't affect your fertility. I'm going to do a test, I'm going to reassure you. For me, it's really important in making patients not feel that way, to not hold on to guilt and decisions that they made. And I think we all make decisions with our body that are right for us at the right time. And I would hope that any fertility doctor would also do that, just be really reassuring and comforting and be like, look, this is where we are right now. Let's go where we're going. And all doctors should be non-judgmental. But I mean, gynecologists in general, we talk to patients about a lot of really personal things, and patients have to feel comfortable talking to us. So I would want patients, for instance, to tell me they had a sexually transmitted infection as opposed to being embarrassed to talk to me about it, because that might make me think, okay, well, let's check your tubes. Let's do these things. So them disclosing things actually helps me treat them better. And I think if you say, are there lifestyle choices? I mean, we talk a lot about eggs and egg freezing. I mean, STIs is one thing. So gonorrhea and chlamydia can impact your tubes. So when we're talking to young women and you're doing your pap tests and things like that, the important thing for doctors to say, hey, also protect yourself against STIs. Lots of women are on the birth control pill. Birth control pills protect you against pregnancy, but they don't protect you against infections. And most patients don't know that a STI can cause a tubal factor infertility, which can be a big issue. So, and again, it's not about shame or not shame, because STIs are completely treatable with antibiotics. But if patients know that, maybe they're more likely when they have weird discharge to get it looked at. And also, if they've had it before, they're more likely to see a fertility doctor and get their tubes checked before they start trying. So I think the shame is what impacts success rates and patients' ability to take care of themselves. So the big message is gynecologists should be the doctors that you feel safest to talk about anything with.
What are some of the implications to delaying pregnancy?
I think one of the bigger ones is often people think about their first pregnancy. So when they're talking about age, again, they understand age and fertility go together, but they're like, okay, we're going to have our first at 38. And usually when they come see me, I'm like, well, what about baby number two? So, and they're like, what do you mean baby number two? We don't even know if we want baby number two. And I think the big thing is when you're talking to your partner, it's how many do we want? What's our overall goal? We want to have both of those before a certain age, and kind of factoring those in. Because remember, pregnancy is 9 months, whether you choose to breastfeed or not, people usually don't show up the day after they have a baby. So usually if you're thinking 2 years between each pregnancy, you kind of want to factor that in. If you're going to have more than one, those are things to think about. And if you're delaying things, a lot of couples will come see me and I'll be like, no, you're 38, you want 3 babies. We actually do IVF and freeze embryos. So instead of them trying, we jump right to IVF to protect baby number 2 and 3. So again, reason to come see us. So even if you're 38, you have a partner, you just got married, you're thinking of getting pregnant next year, you're the perfect couple to come see us, because maybe you'll try earlier. So I'm always like, it's cheaper just to try earlier, but we can also just create embryos. So the misconception is fertility preservation is actually for couples too that just aren't ready to start trying, but they know the reproductive goals, especially if you met your partner later in life. It's always good to get a double check and see what's going on.
Has there been any new developments in reproductive health science or technology that you're excited about?
Yeah, I think with the clinic I'm at in Poland, we're looking more into artificial intelligence. So sounds easy, egg freezing fertility, but IVF success rates still aren't 100%. And depending on the patient population, you could do IVF and it could be a 20% success rate. So part of improving success rates is, how do we choose better embryos? How do we choose better eggs? How do we get better eggs and sperm? And so definitely artificial intelligence is doing that. So again, it's one of those things that's emerging, and not a lot of clinics are using it first line, but it's emerging.
It's so wild how artificial intelligence is impacting even industries I didn't ever think it would. And this is like definitely one of them. From your perspective, if someone is pursuing or exploring getting pregnant, what are your recommendations around alcohol?
optimizing lifestyle doesn't mean doing nothing. So I think if you're eating healthy, you're having a balanced diet, alcohol moderation, and moderation to me definitely is a few drinks per week. So it's not binge drinking on the weekend or having a glass of wine every night, but definitely decreasing. The advice changes a little bit when you go from trying to an infertility patient. So patients who are doing IVF and things like that, we are a little stricter and we're like, let's not do the alcohol. So marijuana, that's probably one. I mean, it's obviously legalized where I am. And we did worry that there would be more of an impact on sperm. So we know that marijuana use can impact egg and sperm quality. So we're usually telling our patients to decrease marijuana use. Nicotine, again, egg and sperm quality. So when we talk about optimization, we're a little more no marijuana, no nicotine. Alcohol is more of a moderation, like it's okay to drink here and there. We also tend to give the advice on once you've ovulated. So fertility patients always know when they're ovulating. We're pretty picky. So usually that's when implantation is occurring. So we usually say after you ovulate, no alcohol. I do think it's important to live your life. So fertility patients can be fertility patients for years. Than to say you're never going to have a drink. You're never going to eat a French fry. It's just mentally challenging for them. So I tend to be like, you know, if you need a glass of wine, have a glass of wine. It's okay. It's not going to change your egg quality. It's the same as fertility doesn't change overnight. One glass of wine isn't going to be the difference between IVF working and not working.
Yeah. What should someone do in the event that they are navigating their fertility journey and they're wanting to do that initial check and they get to results that they're not happy with? What recommendations would you make for them?
It's such an emotional information that you're giving people. It feels life-changing. I'm always really gentle in that visit. And I'm like, listen, this is a big thing. We need more data points. We don't want to just go off one test. So let's revisit this in a month and see what it is. And let's recheck everything. Often it's hard to absorb things when it's not what you thought. Everybody who sits in front of me did it for reassurance. They did it so that I could high five them and they feel good and they go home. And when they don't get the news they want, it's shocking. So everything I say after, I think gets really lost because they're really just focusing on what the test results were. So it's always important to do another visit and a check-in once they've had a second to take it all in. And usually then they have a lot of questions about why this happened. What are we going to do? What can I do? What did I do? And I think the most important thing from my perspective is you didn't do anything. For most patients, this is how you're born, or there's been some kind of intervention like chemotherapy or surgery that did. You don't cause anything happening with your fertility. It happens to you, not because of something you did. And that's important for patients. And also, there's usually a lot of questions on, can I reverse this? Can I do this? So it goes back to my job's a lot of education, and it's talking to people and explaining things and answering questions. And then it really transitions to once they understand the situation, here's the options. For me, it's not about the outcome. It's just making sure people feel comfortable and feel like they're informed and that they're making good decisions.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for this conversation. I feel like I've learned so much, but I'm sure that people listening in have learned a lot too. I'd love to wrap up this conversation with just taking one more piece of advice from you. So what is your go-to advice for people that are navigating their fertility journey?
I think the biggest thing is find someone you're comfortable with. So I do a lot of second opinions, and I think it's such a personal journey. Sometimes it's not whether the doctor is a good doctor, it's just that feeling. And you have to feel comfortable. You have to feel heard. You have to feel like you're getting the information you want. That actually makes a journey better. So if you're struggling and you're feeling like for whatever reason, you're not at the right clinic, there's lots of clinics and there's lots of doctors and we're all different. And I always tell people there's different doctors at our clinic for the very reason that different people connect with different people. So never be afraid to say, you know what, I'm just going to get a second opinion or I'm going to change things up because it is a personal journey. And I always tell patients, you really have to feel good about where you are and feel good about the information you're getting. So I think it's the one area where you're going to be in this journey sometimes for a month, sometimes for a year. So just make sure it feels like a good fit for you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Kim. I really appreciate it. And I'm just going to say goodbye.
Thank you so much.
And that's a wrap on our conversation with Dr. Kim. I don't know about you, but I feel so much more informed and less in the dark about fertility. Tune in next week for another candid conversation with a very special guest. And until then, please rate this episode or leave a comment to let us know what you thought. This podcast is produced by Liz Cooper and Victoria Christie. That's me. And edited by Diego Domine. See you next time. I know this is the third time I'm talking about Eunatural Fertility Aid multivitamins, but there's one more thing I wanted to tell you about. Trying for a baby can be physically and emotionally demanding, but His and Her Conception Bundle provides peace of mind and confidence in your fertility journey. These full-spectrum multivitamins can help to support healthy conception and fill in the nutrient gaps that might impact your reproductive health. Conception for Her helps balance hormones, regulate menstrual cycles, and support ovulation, while Conception for Him helps support healthy sperm count, motility, and strength. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about You Natural His and Hers Conception Bundle.